Hey, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. Build a customized renter's policy with American Family Insurance so you can protect your tandem bike on the go.
Thief!
Oh, he is struggling with that two-seater. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at amfam.com.
Some exclusions may apply. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
In 2021 in Dundee in Scotland, a young Filipino mum and a two-year-old daughter were murdered. The police investigation and judicial process that followed uncovered details that would rank amongst the most harrowing in Scottish criminal history, the full facts of which will never be disclosed to the public. This is what happens when a predatory paedophile goes online to hunt their perfect victim. This is the case of Andrew Innes.
I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. Today's case, you're gonna feel really angry. I know you're gonna feel really angry because the people who come to my channel are all individuals with high levels of compassion, and you have morality running through your veins. And whenever there is a case like this, it challenges every point and aspect of our human psyche and being, because it is so at odds with who we are, and it goes against all of those protective mechanisms that we have. Whenever I cover a case that involves child murder, it's the reaction that I feel that I know is provoked in everybody else. It's that sense of how can somebody take the most vulnerable and innocent and beautiful parts of our population, which are children, and snuff out their lives as if they're worthless objects that can be discarded. It's completely terrifying to me that we live amongst these predators. And Andrew Innes is one of those individuals that I genuinely hope spends the rest of his life in torturous agony. And I'll say that before I even start discussing what he did. This is a really recent case. It's one I followed. It's one that I'm sure very few of you will know, particularly in other countries. If you're in the UK and certainly in Scotland, it probably is one that you'll have heard of. And hopefully by the end of this, you too will understand that we're dealing with the kind of dangerous predator that is rare, but wow, that has the power to do the most heinous and destructive things to human beings of infinite meaning. Let me take you back to 2021, because this is how recent it's been. We've got 25-year-old Benalyn Burke. She's living with her two-year-old daughter, Jellica. She's living in Bristol, Bristol's beautiful area in southwest England. Now, all the people that knew Benalyn, they described her as an individual who was very lively. She was confident. She had a big personality. She was a great person to be around. She originally came from the Philippines, and that's where she had worked incredibly hard to complete her degree. So she's somebody who's academic, very capable. Also, I think there's something really brave about leaving your home country. No matter whether you have struggles there or otherwise, you know, to uproot and to leave your family, it's really challenging, and it takes somebody with a great amount of courage and a belief potentially that even though you're leaving everything familiar and that means everything to you, there is a better opportunity elsewhere. And like I say, I think that again is testament to Benalyn's particular personality. And as I said, she's somebody who clearly can commit to academic work because she got her degree. And she's somebody that obviously has a huge amount of potential. Now in 2015, this is really where her adventure, I suppose you would call it, to the UK begins. So she meets a guy called Lexington Burke. He's a landlord from the UK. They meet on a dating site. Now, even though there is that huge age gap, one of the things that we have to know is that culturally, this is not out of the ordinary. So in the UK, I don't know, when the odd A-list celebrity has a 40-year age gap between her partner and herself, we're all a little bit like, just don't know what they'd have a lot to talk about. I mean, basically for four decades, they weren't even around. But you know, in the Western world, that can make you go, oh, it makes me feel a little bit icky. But actually, culturally, in places like the Philippines and Thailand, older men, particularly older men from Western countries, they are seen as individuals who can provide a lovely life for their partners. And there's a more traditional side to the woman as well. So they get kind of a good deal. He gets a traditional wife who's going to look after his needs, and she gets somebody who's going to protect her and provide for her economically. And love comes in all shapes and forms, doesn't it? And as long as it's consenting and as long as it's legal, we have to accept that everyone has a right to make those choices. So they get married in the Philippines in 2018, and she actually gives birth to her little girl Jellica a month after that marriage. Now, the following year, they end up all moving to the UK, and Benilyn wanted a better life for her daughter. She wanted it to be less of a struggle. She wanted to be able to give Jellica the best opportunities and the best future possible, which is what every loving parent wants for their child. It's as simple as that. But one of the problems was, in spite of them making this move, the marriage actually broke down pretty soon after she moved to the UK. And this ultimately led to the pair splitting up, which meant that she had to find her own accommodation. So she ends up moving into her own flat in Kingswood, which is just outside Bristol. Now, from the UK, in spite of the fact that she's gone to try to create a better life for herself, for her child, and for her future, she still is providing financial support to her family. So those who are living back home in the Philippines are benefiting because she's working really hard. So she worked in a care home for a short time. She sold vacuum cleaner parts online. But again, this is very much testament to Benilyn and the connection and commitment that she has to the people that she loves. And again, this is something that we see with non-Western individuals who come to the UK. They very often are absolutely committed to providing a better life for the people that they love who remain in their home country. And Benilyn is absolute testament to that reality. Now we get to February 2021. And Benilyn basically connects with a guy from Dundee, Scotland. This is actually on a specific dating website called Filipino Cupid. So it's obviously for individuals who have a particular taste for women from that particular area. That means they're potentially looking for somebody who, like I said, is a little bit more traditional, and often older men are looking for younger women who want to have relationships of commitment and meaning, but also that have a value system that means, I don't know, they get looked after. And whilst it may be odd for some of us to think about a guy and think to ourselves, well, I would hope that they would get in contact with me and imagine whether they were asking me if I provide three meals a day. Yes, if we're ordering from a local takeaway, potentially. But for a lot of us, that feels a bit antiquated. But it doesn't mean that people don't want that in their world. So these kind of websites that exist, they often exist because there genuinely is a market for women in particular who want to partake in the more traditional roles regarding relationships. Now this guy, he's a 50-year-old software engineer. He's called Andrew Innes. And he'd actually previously lived in Japan. He had originally a Japanese wife, had a daughter. But after a period of time, the marriage had broken down and he'd actually been deported back to the UK in 2019. At this point, clearly because his life has taken a massive change, he ends up moving back to his detached house in Troon Avenue, and he'd been renting that out whilst he was living in Japan. Now, in 2020, Innes ends up renting out a room. He rents it out to a guy called Christopher Smith. He's 43 years old. So obviously this wouldn't be unusual. You're looking for somebody to add money to your mortgage, for example. And Christopher Smith is clearly of an age frame similar. Makes sense. But for Christopher, let's say it wasn't plain sailing. It wasn't the kind of roomy situation where you're thinking, this guy's great. I'm loving my landlord. There's nothing weird about him at all. Because it turns out that Christopher says that Innes is somebody who is literally obsessive. So totally cleaning obsessed, highly OCD. And you know, OCD is obviously something that certain people psychologically suffer with, and it can be very, very debilitating, of course. So we can have some sympathy and empathy fought in us the fact that he has this particular debilitating issue. But inviting somebody into your home when you have that problem is potentially not the best thing, particularly if you're highly specific about how your home has to be. So basically, Christopher is told that he needs to do things like keep everything in an exact place, all the tin labels had to face the same way. And also, it wasn't as if Inez was somebody who wanted to have a relationship or friendship with this guy that was potentially something that would be positive, because instead, he just spends his entire time on the computer. He's a complete loner. So for Christopher Smith, it is not the ideal situation, but he's somebody who's quite compliant and goes along with this. And because Inez is somebody who's relatively polite and seems friendly enough when he actually does see him, these oddities and curiosities and quirks don't bother him enough to move out. And he also says that one of the things that he noticed was that Inez was somebody who made a lot of money. So he was somebody who developed software and he did app building, which is obviously something you pay a fortune for. Believe me, I once had an app built. It was the most expensive and distressingly depressing scenario to ever be involved in. They just take money from you like you're hemorrhaging it, even when you don't have it. And in the end, you don't, because you've given it all to the developers. But anyway, that aside, so Christopher is in this situation where he's picking up on these strange behaviours, but it gets even weirder, because when we get to March 2020, you'll all remember March 2020. It's when we got locked up in our homes, you know, where the government were like, can't go out anymore. Okay, you can go out for an hour, but you have to walk one way in a shopping precinct or in any supermarket, because that's how viruses work. That kind of rubbish that occurred. He gets asked by Inez to move out. Clearly, this is not ideal for Christopher. We're just entering a lockdown and he's basically given notice. Now, Inez says that the reason that he needs him to leave is because he's worried about catching COVID because he's considered high risk due to his Crohn's disease. Now, on one level, I would say what we know is that he's got this obsessive compulsive disorder, even though it might not be one that has been actually diagnosed. His behaviour certainly seems to suggest that that's fitting with that diagnosis. And if you are somebody who is quite scared of germs, etc., which can be one of the issues when we're talking about OCD, there could be an element of truth to this. There could be an element of truth to Inez's concerns. But I'm going to just throw it out there with my suspicious little brain. We all know I can't help it. It's pesky. It can't help but notice the fact that these kind of things could be seen in this light, as in, oh, he's just worried about his health. Or it could be that actually he just wants the house to himself. And I'll tell you why I believe that. I believe he wanted the house to himself because I think he was working on plans that he basically wanted to put into action. And it would have been very unhelpful to have a witness there, certainly not a male witness, who I don't know, may be able to take you on if you were doing things that were inappropriate. And certainly who would turn you in with some of the things that I genuinely believe Inez had planned from the get-go. He knew what he was going to do was absolutely reprehensible and wrong. And that's why even at this point in the case, as far as I'm concerned, premeditation begins here. So going back to Benelin communicating with Inez, they start these online communications and Inez makes Benelin a proposition, basically. He says, why not come and work for me? You can work in Dundee. You can work as a community relations manager for me. Even offers to pay her £1,000 a month. Now, at this point, she turns the offer down. She says that she could do the job that she's being offered by him from a home in Bristol. And clearly that's going to be way more convenient, particularly during a pandemic, than relocating to Bristol. And at one point during these exchanges as well, he goes ahead and asks her for intimate photos. Now, Benelin flat out refuses to send any, but it doesn't create an issue in that relationship. She doesn't become offended by it. They seem to get on very well. And again, I think we can contextualise that, can't we? Lots of people, when you're chatting on dating sites, they ask for the odd intimate selfie. Often we refuse, but some people do actually agree to do that. And I think sexting is something that in the modern day era, we are all aware of. So it's not atypical in dating behaviour. And it feels like it's a bit like water off a duck's back for Benilyn. She understands that that's part of the dating game for a lot of people, but she's quite happy to say no. And again, this says something about Benilyn's character. It suggests that she's somebody who's got boundaries. She knows her own moral code system. And no matter how much pressure somebody puts on her, she's quite happy to say no. That is not judging anybody, of course, who may have sent the odd selfie naked. We do those things in life. I appreciate we're living in a liberal age. I don't. I wouldn't do that. If I were to do that, it would probably be sent to a doctor. That's the only time I could imagine sending anything naked from my body to somebody who's trained and is equipped to deal with such a sight. But as I said, again, clearly he's trying to take this to a more sexual level. And I will note that at this point, according to the message exchanges, they did seem to get on relatively well. So for Benilyn, she's clearly thinking that she is building a reasonable relationship stroke friendship with this person. And Benilyn actually tells her family that he's kind, that he's caring, and she's also got that natural inquisitive feeling about the chance to see Scotland. You know, he's offering her the potential to go and see where he lives. It's a different country and it's not too difficult to get there. And I guess that curiosity, it gets the better of her. So after a few weeks of this communication, and despite the fact that they actually lived over 400 miles apart, and at this moment in time when they arranged to meet, lockdown travel restrictions were in place. Remember those? Remember those? Go back to that little weird space and time in your head where you weren't meant to leave your home or local area without having very special circumstances. Yeah. In spite of all of this, they decide to meet and they go for a coffee. And guess what? Innes wasn't even an MP. Sorry, that's a bad joke. Just saying. In the UK, we have members of parliament. You know, the ones who are meant to protect and serve us and look after us and lead by example. Whilst we were all locked up in our homes, they were just having parties. So it's really nice to know that the people who are in charge really care about our well-being. So Innes ends up travelling to Bristol to meet Benilyn in February 2021. But they end up not just having a coffee because Innes manages to actually convince Benilyn to go for a picnic with him because he says, you know, he's driven all that way and it is a long way and he needs to eat, he needs to look after himself, but also it's about spending more time with her. Again, this would not bring up any red flags. If anything, quite the contrary, oh, this guy's driven all this way. He's being super sweet to me. He's even suggesting we go for a picnic, which is relatively romantic. And he's being kind. And bear in mind, she's already got this built-up bias because she's had a few weeks of chatting and communicating with him. And he genuinely seems like a good guy. But it does actually feel this is based on a plan of action that he has. So he has no intention of saying goodbye, essentially, to Benilyn. There's a far bigger plan at hand here. So he manages to convince Benilyn to bring Jellicoe with her to Scotland. So he's going to take them back, show him his hometown. And indeed, the following day, she goes with him. He takes them back to his home in Troon Avenue. And one of the things that is a big red flag to me is when he's being interviewed about what happens to Benilyn and Jellicoe down the line, he actually tells the investigators that on that particular day, he took 2 weekly dosages of his steroid meds. And that was before and during the drive back. Now, again, roid rage is something that people often contest. People say that that doesn't exist. Certainly, as far as I am concerned, I have worked with some very angry men on steroids and I have advised them not to take them because they don't seem to have a positive impact on their mental health. And certainly, if you are ODing to such a degree, well, it really doesn't matter if you're somebody who believes that steroids are the greatest thing in the whole world and you're taking them safely. You take 2 weekly dosages of those steroids at one point. Of course, it's going to have an impact on the way that you act. And it also says something about a chaotic approach that he has to his health and to his wellness and to, I would imagine, the way he likes to feel. Because I think you're taking that level of steroids because you get a kick from the way that that makes you feel. Now also, in Innes' property, which is really bizarre, is a 7-year-old girl. Now, this 7-year-old girl is actually in the car on the journey back up to Dundee. So she's present with Benilyn and Jellica in the car when they're travelling back. Now, it's never actually been made clear in the press as to who this girl was, what relationship she had with Innes. All we know is that she wasn't anything to do with him, essentially. She should not have been there. And her identity has actually been kept secret, and kept secret for an excellent purpose. Nobody needs to know who she is and, moreover, what happened to her. Trauma is something that is personal. It's incredibly challenging to navigate it. And the only people that you need to be aware of that are the people that you trust deeply, and hopefully the supportive mechanisms and people that are in place to enable you to move through your journey of trauma. What you don't need is your name and all the gory details of what happened to you put all over the press when you are too young to have any control over that. Maybe one day she will wish to talk about this. Personally, I would hope that she gets to a point where she can put this experience to at least a back of her mind in a place where it doesn't have a horrendous effect on her for the rest of her life. That may not happen. A lot of you know that trauma can haunt you. But I really pray that this child manages to overcome it and let the scars and wounds that this monster creates for her heal fully. Now, how she ended up even in his home, I have no idea. I genuinely don't know. But later down the line, when they're investigating this horrific crime, they do find that she'd technically been abducted. Now, whether it began as an abduction or just became one at a later stage, again, that is unclear. But she should not have been with this man. She was held there against her will, pure and simple. Now, the purpose of Benilyn's visit to Inna's home, we also don't know that. It's not clear. Even though Benilyn may have well been thinking about whether there was going to be a potential relationship, I do actually find it difficult to imagine what Benilyn saw in him. And again, I appreciate that no one chooses their looks on the whole, but there is something about this guy that I find utterly physically repulsive. He's a very odd individual, full stop. That's according to anybody and everybody who knew him. But on top of that, he is somebody that I genuinely feel wore his ugliness on the outside, and it reflected the ugliness on the in. And like I said, there are lots of people who might not be archetypally beautiful. Some people who may have looks that are quite challenging, but the way that they smile, the way that they engage, it makes them really lovely. They might not be physically attractive, but they are attractive because of their whole nature and their whole being. This is a complete juxtaposition to this guy. I mean it. I find him physically repulsive, and I believe that it matches and mirrors who he is internally. Now, their meeting, by the way, even though they might have been looking potentially at taking their relationship to a different level as far as Benlin's concerned, it wasn't for sex. They hadn't met up to hook up. Not at all. So again, I think this is in line with what Benilyn was like, full stop. You have to see the fact that she didn't send the naked selfie. She didn't send intimate pictures of herself. So therefore, that boundary is still very clear. And this is again validated by the fact that when she goes to his house, he actually makes a makeshift bed in the front room for Benilyn and for her daughter. So it could have been that she was interested in seeing whether there was a potential for a relationship with this guy, but it could equally have been that she just wanted to see Scotland, she wanted to see a new area, she wanted to create new links with somebody, find new friends. That could equally be a possibility as to why she ended up there. And we have to know that Benilyn had definitely not intended to stay there for very long. She must have felt that she was just doing a flying visit because she didn't even take an overnight bag. So for her, she was going to spend that weekend in the day and then she was going home. But you see, that's the thing about our perception of a situation. For Benilyn, this is an innocent trip. She's seen a guy that she's got on with. She's taken her kid for a nice little trip away. She's getting to stay in somebody else's house in a makeshift bed. She's not going to have to pay for a hotel. It was probably exciting to do that. And all she has are positive ideas and thoughts about what's playing out. But what she didn't know is that while she's happily going about her business, having this little trip away, she doesn't realise that she's been targeted and groomed by Innes. So despite the fact that this guy has had no previous violent convictions, In fact, no previous convictions at all. But what nobody realised was that Innes was a violent man and a predatory paedophile. He'd been using his computer skills to hunt online for his perfect victim. In fact, he had a preference for ultra-feminine women with long dark hair, along with a sexual interest in little girls. And he'd actually signed himself up to 34 online dating sites. He'd gone ahead and even compiled a spreadsheet of information on people that he was in contact with and graded them. Yeah, he literally spent time compiling these number of people that he'd been in contact with and grading them in reference to age, height, and weight. And of course, the all-important addition, if they had children. So he went along and he actually awarded the highest scores to women in their mid to late 20s who also had young children. Honestly, at this moment in time, I cannot tell you what I'm doing to this man in my head. It's deeply satisfying. It's also highly illegal. Imagine the psychological mindset of a man who is going through connecting with women and then actually marking them based on the availability of their children and also on the way that they look to fulfill that fantasy, that pen portrait of possibility he's been creating in his mind that will create this perfect victim. Benelin, unfortunately for her, she fits that bill perfectly. As you can see from her pictures, she's a young single mum. She's got a 2-year-old little girl. She's alone in a foreign country, so that makes her more vulnerable. She's desperate to build a better life, so he sees that as potentially somebody that he can manipulate. And all the while, when she's planning this new opportunity, this exploration of a different place, she's completely unaware that this 400-mile trip to Dundee, it was going to be a one-way journey. And like I said, the complete disparity in her perception of what's playing out versus his plans is chilling. So we get to the 19th of February, 2021. This day, Innes, Benelin, Angelica, they end up spending the day sightseeing around Dundee. Bear in mind, this is exactly why Benelin is there. She's gone for a weekend away. She's excited to see a new place in the world. And Innes is taking her there. All the while, he's this wolf in sheep's clothing, this human predator, this disgraceful, disgusting paedophile. And yet he's playing the role of this perfect person, showing them around as they visit this new area. Innes also claims later down the line that on that particular evening, he didn't get any sleep that night. This I'm saying because clearly in his defense for actions, he's scrabbling around to think of reasons that could potentially exacerbate issues within him. This is what these kind of killers do. They try to create these pieces of a puzzle that give them leverage to say that there is a reason why they acted so reprehensibly. Clearly, we believe none of it. But I'm giving you that because that's what he's saying to investigators when they start to question him. Oh, he's exhausted. Then we get to the 20th of February, 2021. This is the day that Innes is meant to drive Benelin, Angelica, back to Bristol. Now, Innes has been out shopping. He goes to B&Q. He buys a 1.5 kilogram lump hammer and building materials. Keep that in mind. Now again, another thing that he adds when he's being investigated for this crime is he says that on this particular morning, he'd taken another 2 weekly dosages of steroids. So this guy is overtaking steroids consistently. And he must be doing that because it's giving him a kick. It's as simple as that. I don't believe he's doing that because it's inciting rage or anger. I don't believe that. I think he's doing it because he likes the feeling. Or, of course, we could argue he's just talking a load of BS, and again, he's scrabbling for reasons to have carried out the heinous crime I'm going to talk to you about shortly. So he's gone out, done this shopping, taken these apparent dosages of steroids. Now, when Innes arrives home, All she's doing at that moment in time is standing at the kitchen sink. She's got her back to him at this moment in time because she's sorting out the packed lunches. And again, just think of the psychology. Where is she in this moment? She feels safe. She's preparing packed lunches for all of them. As far as she's concerned, absolutely no warning signs. She would not have been in that kitchen preparing that food if she had any anticipation at all that Innes is this dangerous predator at all. So again, he's a chameleon. You know, this guy's a chameleon. He's got her there. He's taken her out. She's had a nice time. And now, while she's doing this, while she's looking after her child that morning, he has been out and bought these materials. And she's so unprepared. Because even when he arrives, she's still just getting on with sorting out what they need for their road trip. And then all of a sudden, when she has her back to him, he just launches this brutal, unprovoked attack. Now, according to Inna's own later testimony, he basically walks in, takes that hammer that he just bought, and just strikes her in the back of the head. Even though this would have rendered her completely confused, shocked, in agonizing pain, probably all but near unconscious, he then claims that they wrestled for a brief time on the floor. And that just says something about her fighting spirit. If that is the case, if when he hits her in the back of the head, because can you imagine a 1.5 kilogram hammer going straight into the back of your head? For most of us, adrenaline or otherwise, we're probably going to be straight on the floor, KO'd. It's as simple as that. But if she did wrestle, then the fighting spirit in her is amazing. And the maternal protective mechanism within her was powerful. He then says that after they've wrestled on a floor for a period of time, he basically leaves, goes into his office, and then gets a large samurai sword. Now, that would suggest to me, without a shadow of a doubt, that Medellin is incapacitated. Otherwise, why would he get up from the kitchen, which is clearly going to have lots of knives in it? She's been preparing food for a road trip. So you're not going to leave a victim who is capable in that situation, surrounded by potential weapons. But this is according to him. He has time to go and retrieve that large samurai sword. But when he gets back into the kitchen, Benelin apparently is magically up, runs towards him. And at this point, he thrusts a blade deeply into her chest. Again, makes no sense. As far as I'm concerned, if she was incapacitated on the floor, she's going to be an absolute wreck. This is a grown man. She's tiny, by the way. He's going to be able to overpower her. And the last thing she's probably thinking of doing is running towards a man with a samurai sword. That's not what you're going to do. Even if you've managed to arm yourself in that situation, which I doubt that she had the opportunity to do, the point is, you're still in a position where this really big guy compared to you has got a samurai. So why would you run at him? And then he says, after he's thrust this blade deeply into her chest, he just repeatedly strikes her around the head with the handle of the sword and the hammer until she stops moving. So he's using various weapons. You know, when somebody says he used the handle of the sword and hammer, people can imagine it in one situation, but it's not, is it? If you're using the handle of a sword, you're then going to be using a particular hand that you strike with. The likelihood is you're then going to put that down, pick up the next weapon and use that. So he is using a variety of weapons to snuff out the life of this innocent woman. Now, after he's done that, he basically carries her body to the bathroom and puts her body in the bath. And we have to remember, this is Benelin, this petite Filipino woman. She was planning a road trip home. Her daughter is in the house with this monster, and she was preparing food for them. And now she has been brutally slain. Nothing could have prepared her for him to strike in that way. To say blindsided is the biggest understatement that I probably can say in this entire video. Now, after he's gone ahead and seemingly without conscience or care killed Benelin, he puts the plan of action to dispose of her body. So first of all, he removes everything from the kitchen. Then he digs up the floor So you can see where he's going with this. And he actually stated when he was being interviewed that that actually took him a longer time. Because obviously you have concrete in a floor. So he has a high level of determination to actually do this. And again, in your minds, you have to think, well, why would he be doing that? If this guy at some point is going to say he was out of his mind, for example, why would you have the wherewithal to decide that you can dispose of a body beneath the floor in your kitchen, which is clearly what he's thinking of doing? The level of premeditation there is absolutely obvious. So after he manages to break through the concrete, he then gets Benalyn's body, wraps a blanket and tarpaulin around her head, and then puts a body in black rubble bag and then lays her in the hole in the floor. So he's thinking about getting away with this. You know, that's what we clearly know. He's killed her and he has no intention of being brought to justice. He's trying to ensure that she's never found. Now, 2 or 3 days after this horrific, senseless, mindless, grotesque execution of Benalyn, it gets even darker. And it's really hard to say that it gets darker because what I've just described is incomprehensible and reprehensible and inexcusable and disgusting. But it does, it gets even darker. Because after he's killed Benalyn, basically Jellicoe becomes his second victim. And the reason that he tells the police he senselessly murders this little girl is because she wanted her mother. What child wouldn't? Benalyn and Jellicoe were completely inseparable. She was devoted to that little girl. And suddenly this 2-year-old child is in a hostile environment with her mother's killer. She's lonely. Her best friend, the person who protects her, the primary carer who's brought her up all this time, she's not present. She must have been absolutely terrified. And this is the excuse that he uses for actually killing her. Because she was constantly crying. She wanted her mummy. That provoked him. That's what he tries to express, at least at this point, to those who investigate this case and interview him. However, the 7-year-old girl, the little girl that's in that home, against her will, bear in mind, she ends up telling authorities that Innes killed Jellicoe during a game of hide and seek. So Innes goes off to hide, the girl counts, but during this time when this little girl's counting, he takes Jellicoe to the bathroom. And that's the last time that little girl saw the 2-year-old alive. And when the little girl actually goes, as you would, to look for the person that you're meant to be seeking in that game, she approached the bathroom and Innes had pushed the door closed. Now, the door actually hit her in the face. And she said, after that happened, Andrew pretended that Jellicoe was hiding because he played hide and seek. But he actually killed Jellicoe. Now, imagine that 7-year-old's trauma. She's in the home with this human monster predator, and she knows that he's killed 2 people. How would you manage that? The horror, the reality that you're living in a space with a man who's got you against your will, and now the other 2 people in that home are dead. What's the message that it gives you? You're next. Do as he wants. Or what will occur? The psychological trauma of that is just incomprehensible. After he has murdered the 2-year-old, Innes then places little Jellicoe's body in another black rubble bag. Black rubble bag. Like they're just waste. They have no meaning whatsoever to him. And what he has done to Benalyn is absolutely barbaric and unforgivable. But I cannot make the mental stretch even to understand the psychology of a human being who can hear a child crying for their mother scared and to react by murdering them. It defies logic and reason that these human predators are so adept at snuffing out the life of others, including children, without giving it a second's thought, aside from a thought for their own freedom, aside from a thought for how they're going to get away with it. So after he's put that little girl's body in a black rubble bag Again, he places her in the hole in the kitchen floor with their mother's body. And then he just concretes over them. And then he lays new tiles. I mean, who does that? Who is so calculated, so planned, so premeditated, that they know exactly where they're going to dispose of the body and how they're going to actually prepare a situation so that if investigators come and knock in, then there's nothing to see here. But again, what we know about these kind of human predators is they may think that they can outsmart people. They may think that they can snuff out the life of individuals that they don't believe have any meaning. But often that's their biggest downfall, their arrogance, their narcissism, their antisocial beliefs, because the truth is they can't imagine what it would be like to be loved. But Benalyn was loved. Benalyn is loved. And Benalyn's family, they're going to want to know what's happened to their beloved daughter, their friend, their loved one. And so they soon become really concerned because they don't hear from her. Because this is one of the things that he massively underestimates. Yeah, okay, they live in the Philippines. But despite the distance, they were incredibly close. And Benalyn actually missed her family terribly. But she was determined to stay in the UK because she really wanted to provide a better life for her daughter. And also, she had this real commitment. She wanted to be the breadwinner for her family. She was sacrificing her own needs in so many ways to make sure that Jellicoe had the best life, but also so that she could send money home. She could look after the people that she loved. And that cost her on a loneliness level, but it was worth it to give the family that she loved so much a better opportunity. And she actually spoke with her sister, Shella Aquino, on a daily basis. Even though there was an 8-hour difference, they literally spoke every single day. That is testament to such a connected relationship. But of course, now there's been no contact with her sister since the first day that she arrived in Dundee. Now, whilst Benalyn's family had obviously never met Innes, they did know about him. She'd communicated that she was seeing him, that they were communicating, that they were talking. And all of her family were aware that she was going to go to his home. In fact, on the journey that they took back from Bristol to Innes, Benalyn had actually video called her sister, and her sister had actually asked to see him. So Benalyn had pointed the camera at him whilst he was driving. They had exchanged pleasantries, and she, as a sister, actually hadn't had any immediate concerns about him. Of course not, because if somebody is doing something malevolent, you don't expect that they'll have a chat with you on a video call. But again, this is because Innes is underestimating the drive that this family will have to find out what's happened to Benalyn. Now, even though the family had been okay with her going, family sentiments towards Innes actually changed quite quickly. So after not hearing from Benalyn for 2 days, the reason that they started to become really anxious was because on that second day of not hearing from her, Innes contacts Sheila. So he personally gets in touch and says that he discovered Benalyn was in contact with numerous other men, so he'd ended things. Then he adds to this that not only has he ended their apparent relationship, he'd driven her to Glasgow and just left her with a teacher that she'd met online. Now, this is so left field. It makes absolutely no sense to the family. First of all, what's it got to do with them, even if Benalyn was in contact with numerous other men? Number two, why would he be getting in contact with the family he has absolutely nothing to do with to inform them of that? And why wouldn't she be the one talking to them about her following actions, decisions, and relocation? She would be doing that. She speaks to her sister every single day. And then he also goes on to say that she's also hiding from her ex-husband who wants custody of Jellicoe. So that is something that the family would be fully aware of. She's not going to invest in this guy that she's not interested in because she's speaking to all these other guys. I mean, just think about it in that context. He's trying to profess that she is basically cheating on him. She's been found out. And in that short space of time where he clearly meant nothing to her, according to him, because she's speaking to all these other people, she's confided all this really important information. No, absolutely makes no sense. He even says that her ex-husband wants her deported. It just makes no sense. And Innes said that he'd gone ahead and advised her to destroy a mobile phone so that she could hide from authorities. Again, why would she be taking advice of a guy that she had apparently been cheating on with all these other potential guys? And why would he care? If he's ended the relationship because she's so meaningless and he's dumped her off with a teacher that's a stranger in Glasgow, why would he act this way and why would she act this way? It does not add up in any way, shape or form. So his whole premise here is that the mobile phone is not something that she's going to be able to use to contact the family, and that's going to be an excuse as to why she hasn't been in contact. But of course, that isn't the only way that you can get in contact with her. So her sister just uses Messenger, and Sheila's repeatedly trying to message her to ask whether she's okay. And when she doesn't get any response, she speaks to Inez to ask where Benilyn is and to ask if he knows whether she's okay. Of course, he reassures her sister that she's absolutely fine and that she'd be in contact really soon. He even goes on and says, you know what, there's not a lot of crime in Scotland, so don't worry about it, which is just ultimately disgraceful behaviour when you think about what this man has already done. Because of course, Benilyn and Angelica are dead, buried in his kitchen right now. And he is manipulating the family to try to act like everything's fine, to put some distance between him and Benilyn. Now, a few days later, he again personally contacted Sheila and claims that a man that he left Benilyn with in Glasgow had actually been in touch with him personally to say that he was settling in well. Massive alarm bells. I mean, you just know, don't you, how Sheila and her family are feeling at this moment in time. This random stranger who hasn't been in Benilyn's life for more than a few weeks is now contacting them regularly, in spite of the fact that he says that she wasn't interested in him and basically he'd broken things off because of her contact with other people. But now some random guy that she's actually gone off with is contacting him to say she's settling in well. Said no rational person in the whole human race ever would have said. It just doesn't occur. That's not how somebody acts when you've been spurned in a potential relationship. But this is what he does. So he tells Sheila she's happy to have found someone nice and desperately relieved that her baby won't be taken away from her. Could somebody please reinstitute torture for this particular case, for this particular predator? Just throwing it out there. I know it's probably not something that people agree with, but that's where my mindset is right now. I don't know, just some thumbscrews, maybe some hang, drawing and quartering, that kind of thing. Anyway, back to this actual case. So Inez has told Sheila that he's now drawing a line under the relationship that he's had with Benilyn and he's moving on. Like literally, this guy is so antisocial and so lacking in empathy that he feels he can have this conversation with the family and they'll be like, okay, just draw a line under it. We can see you're not involved now. She's gone off with that guy in Glasgow and she's really relieved because everything's gonna be all right. Okay, we'll just back off and never contact her again. But that's his take in this situation. He's moving on. He also says he's gonna destroy the history of contact between him and Benilyn because he wants to protect her from the authorities. Again, none of this makes sense. Now, when Sheila actually asks him, because she's savvy, she's sensible, she's like, something's going on here. I don't feel safe. I don't feel my sister's safe. I feel like something malevolent is playing out. She says, send me a video of my sister so that I know that she is safe. And he does. But he just sends her an old one. Again, how can this man believe that the people that love Benilyn, Angelica, are simply gonna leave this alone, accept that she's just moved on with a random stranger? This is the woman who had contact every day. This is the woman who sent money to the family to help protect them and give them an easier life. This is not something that is going to mean that the family walk away. There are too many things that make no sense, and the family is invested in her on lots of levels. So we get to the 1st of March 2021. So that's 2 weeks after leaving the home in Bristol with Inez. Benilyn and her daughter are actually reported missing. So it's Benilyn's estranged husband, Lexington, who basically contacts the police because he's supposed to pick up Jellicoe on the 19th of February 2021. That's a custody arrangement. But he'd been able to make any contact with Benilyn, and she hadn't responded to any text messages, which was very unusual. She hadn't answered a phone. He'd actually gone to her home and posted a note to her door, but he'd heard nothing. And even on top of this, which is obviously causing massive concern, the local social work department had then got in touch with him because Benilyn had missed an appointment and they couldn't contact her either. She's just vanished into thin air as far as they're concerned. So 2 days later, police begin a missing persons investigation. And you can imagine, can't you, that for the dad in this situation, he could be thinking, well, has she potentially left the country? Has she gone back to the Philippines and so on and so forth? So I wouldn't imagine at that moment in time, he's thinking, oh my God, something awful has happened to Benilyn Angelica. He's probably thinking, what on earth has gone on and where is my daughter? And how do I find out where Benilyn has gone with her? It must be so far out of the realms of ration to imagine that something so heinous has befallen both of those people that had once had such meaning, and his daughter obviously still had mass meaning to him. So we get to the 5th of March, 2021. The police are obviously at this point aware that they're searching for a missing mother and daughter. And clearly, I don't know about you, but one of the things that I think we're all quite aware of right now is technology. There's a lot of it, isn't it? There's a lot of monitoring everywhere. And I don't know, CCTV, it's everywhere. And guess what? If you drive a car, not only is there CCTV, there's actually number plate recognition. And that number plate recognition is like picked up every few miles, sometimes even less than that. If you live in London, every 4 seconds. But the reality is, you end up being able to be tracked to where you live. That is how powerful that stuff is. So of course, this is also at a point where lockdown has happened. So there aren't loads of cars on the road. It's more like a ghost town, isn't it? So this means that it's really easy for them to identify the car which had made the return trip from Dundee to Bristol, because it was, as I said, during lockdown. So they follow it through and they locate that car in the driveway of Inna's home in Troon Avenue. So when officers actually call at the property, because now they have a place to go where they know at least this was the last place that Benilyn had been seen. So when the officers actually call at the property and speak to Inna's, he's really welcoming. He's like, come in, I've got nothing to hide. It's all fine. Do you want some cake? That didn't happen, of course. No, he did what so many predators did during lockdown. And it went like this. Excuse me, Mr. Inna's, would it be all right if we come in and have a look in your house? I'm afraid you can't. Why? I am self-isolating because I have Crohn's disease. Ah, that's a shame, because we'd really like to look. That was a terrible Scottish accent. I think I became Irish at the end of it. But nevertheless, that's what he did, like a lot of predators did. No, you can't come in, that kind of thing, because he's self-isolating. And he also claimed that his daughter was just out of the bath. I'm not sure why he added that in. I'm presuming because the officers were actually able to see a young girl in the front room who was watching cartoons. And even though she was, I don't know, just out of the bath, she was fully clothed with dry hair. So throwing it out there straight away, police are like, BS. So at this point, the officers decide that they're going to question them about who this girl is. And he says, oh, it's my little girl, Lorna. Sorry, I'm going to stop this Scottish accent now. But that's what he says, Lorna. But the officers are perturbed by this whole situation. They really are. Because it just doesn't feel like it's adding up. And he doesn't seem very reliable in the way that he's expressing himself. So at this point, the officers just say, look, what's happened to Benilyn? What's happened to Jellica? Where are they? Inna's straight away says, oh, right, okay. Well, we were in this relationship online and I picked them up from Bristol a couple of weeks ago, but then I decided that I was going to end the relationship because she was in contact with loads of different men. So then I drove them, as you would, you know, if you've just realised that this woman you like has been seeing loads of other men. I just decided that, you know, I wasn't upset at all. And I drove her to Glasgow so that she could meet another man. So those protestations that the officers are hearing, they really are not happy with it. They can tell straight away there is something completely off about this individual. His story isn't making sense. What he's telling us isn't adding up. It doesn't make sense whatsoever that he would have driven this woman to meet another guy. And they're concerned about the little girl who's there as well. So they insist. They absolutely insist that they need to get into the property. And I love that. Because I think it's really difficult for police officers, particularly when somebody's saying they're self-isolating because they've got Crohn's and so on and so forth. And their instincts are so correct. So they basically get into that property. And the minute they do, they're like, there is something really bad here. They see that the place is in complete disarray. They notice that literally everything from the kitchen has just been taken out and left around the house. And in the kitchen, of course, they can see that Inez is in the process of laying new floor tiles. So everything is standing out as off and weird and strange. And then the officers actually go up to the girl and speak to her and that brave little girl. Because can we just think for a minute that everything I've been describing to you, there has been a 7-year-old child who is not his child in that home, held against her will. And those officers are there, and you can just imagine the way that she's been groomed in that situation, the terror that she's been through. And when you're in that scenario, it's amazing how silent some people will be because they think that the ramifications of them speaking out can be deadly. Certainly when you've seen it happen to other people, the actions have turned deadly. And yet, in spite of this, that little girl, that 7-year-old, has the bravery to tell the police that she's been held against her will for 2 weeks. Now, the police realise this is absolutely horrifying. They have no doubt whatsoever that this little girl is telling the truth. Now, these questions by the police obviously continue at the home, and it gets more and more obvious to Inez that it's going to have to tell them something because they aren't going away. And this little girl has admitted that she's been held there against her will. So eventually, following this questioning, he just caves in. He confesses what he'd done. But of course, he confesses what he did with a slant on him being the victim. So he tells the police that Benelin had basically attacked him. Yeah, they got into this physical fight. He'd killed her, because obviously Benelin would do that. She's the mother of a 2-year-old. She's never had a violent past in any way, shape or form. In fact, she's an incredibly lovely and compassionate woman who's incredibly nurturing. But yeah, suddenly she's turned totally violent and attacked this man whilst making lunch for them to eat on the way back to Bristol. So this is, again, him just trying to get away with something, use a self-defense plea. And then he says that, yes, he'd killed her because of this fight, but then he decided to bury her under the kitchen floor, 3 or 4 feet down, under lots of concrete. Now, if you had killed somebody in self-defense, you may be traumatized, you may be horrified, you may be thinking to yourself, I've ruined my life, they might not believe me, but what you're going to do is you're going to call the police. Probably going to call an ambulance before that in the vague hope that you haven't actually killed the person. You're not going to think, you know what I'm going to do? Now this horrible thing has played out, even though I am completely innocent, I will just remodel my kitchen and bury them in it. That is not what anybody with a shred of innocence would even contemplate, let alone carry out. So obviously the police have now been told that he's killed Benelin, and there is another thing on their mind, because they're not just there for Benelin. They want to know where 2-year-old Jellica is. And he informs them, under the floor with the mum. The child was screaming. At this point, the horrified police officers, I cannot imagine for a moment how they felt in those moments. I mean, come on, they went round there thinking there was a missing person. They probably thought that she had ran off with the child, all those kind of stereotypical biases that you have and that you want to believe, because nobody wants to believe that they're walking into a home of a murderer of such a level. And yet they're given that information. This young woman and this beautiful 2-year-old little girl has been brutally murdered and buried under the kitchen floor. Those police officers must have been traumatised. Innes, at this point, is arrested on suspicion of double murder, and rightly so, because there is absolutely no way he isn't banged to rights, pure and simple. Another thing that is incredible about this guy is when he's arrested, he shows absolutely no remorse for his actions. In fact, according to investigators, he simply wanted to wallow in self-pity. So initially he goes for that classic, you know, the classic defence, self-defence. You know, she was cooking. And then all of a sudden, from absolutely nowhere, she comes at him with a sushi knife. And he even went on and said that at the end of the day, yes, he killed her. And yes, he killed her daughter. But at least he gave them a decent Christian burial. And that's all he'd done. Sorry, but is there a special chamber that we can send individuals like this to? I don't know. I feel if somebody kills a woman and a child like this and then suggests that essentially they have no remorse because they gave them a decent burial and that they actually only feel sorry for themselves, there has to be some kind of special chamber that they can just be left in for eternity. I despair when we think about these monsters moving amongst us. I really do. He takes absolutely no responsibility and accountability. And he even goes as far when he's being questioned as to say he'd never touched the 7-year-old girl either. You know, this 7-year-old girl who's been held against her will, who has nothing to do with him. However, of course, none of you will be shocked even for a second to understand that none of what Innes has told the detectives is true. Everything he said, every word out of his mouth is lies. And this is obvious because he keeps changing his version of events. He changes it multiple times. This is during the police investigation. So after he says it's self-defense, he then goes on to tell the police that he'd killed Bedelin due to voices in his head. Because that, again, is a way of him thinking, okay, it's going to be obvious that it wasn't self-defense. It's going to be obvious that I actually did kill her. But if I can plead insanity, lack of responsibility, diminished responsibility, then there is a chance that potentially I won't be going to some horrible high security prison and so on and so forth. So he's manipulating all the way through. But of course, we know that the insanity plea is a very, very high bar and it's rarely accepted. But again, this is a guy who thinks he can get away with things by just telling a family that their member has left, gone off with a stranger. So within his mindset, he probably thinks he's boxing clever by saying this. And he says that he was in a psychotic state. He'd had a lack of sleep. He'd had steroid medication that he was taking. He said that he was wandering round like a zombie. As I said to you earlier, that's why I'm not sure that he actually took the steroids. I just think he's probably looking for a defence mechanism here to say, oh, I didn't know what I was doing. I was out of my mind. We see that time and time again in these kind of cases. So he's going on about the fact that, you know, he was out of his mind. But again, that doesn't stick. So he changes his story again. So the final version, yes, literally, the final version. Because there were so many that this absolute predator came out with. He said that Bedelin was standing at the kitchen sink and then from the back, suddenly, with her long dark hair, she resembled his estranged Japanese wife. Yeah, so he says that Bedelin had basically resembled this hybrid of his ex-wife and another former partner, which is a woman that he'd met at a rope bondage club in Japan, and actually he'd cheated on his wife with her. But then he said he kind of started to think of all the nasty things his wife had allegedly done. I don't know, had she cheated with somebody at a rope bondage club, as you had? Just blows my mind when people are so useless at trying to fabricate a story that even the story that they've had time to think out not only doesn't make sense, but actually makes them look like they're an even worse human being than they already were. But he then says that all these thoughts are running through his head, and also he thought about this mistress that he dumped him by text in the most horrible way for another man. I don't know, because she had good sense potentially and realised that you were a freak of nature in us. That's what I believe would have happened, and good on her for running the hell away. So apparently these thoughts just started to pump through his mind, and in his own words, he became apocalyptically angry and killed her, claimed his blood was boiling. So of course, at this point, what Innes is trying to do is to say that the murder of Benjamin wasn't actually premeditated. It was this spur of a moment, loss of control, crime of passion, if you'd have it, so to speak. But the investigators know this is absolute pap. It's the word that we use in the North to suggest that it's rubbish. Because when they continue the investigation, they can see that there is loads of evidence that completely goes against this story. So first of all, they've got that CCTV footage of Innes going and buying a lump hammer and building materials on the day that Benjamin was murdered because he was going to bury her in the kitchen. Clearly, that isn't something that happens just because you're in a fit of rage. It's planned. So the police rightly suspect that he's bought the hammer with a specific intent to use it on Benjamin. Innes, of course, claims that that's not the case. Said if he'd been going to buy a murder weapon, he wouldn't have chosen a hammer. Claimed he would have bought something that would have produced a cleaner kill. I don't know. Would you suggest maybe a samurai sword that you had in your house? Just throwing it out there. Because to me, he used that weapon to make it difficult for Benjamin to respond and react. You know, he hit her on the head with a hammer, and that gave him time to go and get the weapon of his choice, which was a samurai sword, which is just absolutely grotesque. The post-mortem that they did on that poor woman, it established that she died from severe head trauma, but also internal bleeding from the horrific single stab wound that she got to the chest. Meanwhile, Jellica, that beautiful little girl, that two-year-old child, she was basically a victim of strangulation asphyxiation. They didn't actually know how that had been done. They knew that there was pressure that had been applied to both her neck and the mouth area, though. But it really doesn't take much to kill a child of that age. I mean, you cover the mouth, you put a little bit of pressure on the throat, and it's going to result in death. And the idea of this grown man going ahead and feeling that he had a right to do that, but also being able to hold that small child in your arms and to actually feel the life just disappearing from a body and that you're causing it. I mean, what kind of a monster does that? Genuinely, I just think prison is too good for these kind of people. I really do. Now, what Innes has done that I've described to you so far, it just is horrifying, isn't it? And actually, the hardened investigators who took on this case, they were absolutely traumatised by what they found beneath the concrete in the kitchen. But it doesn't end there. Because the search of Innes' property and the forensic testing, wow. This was just the beginning of uncovering these horrific atrocities. So we have this little 7-year-old girl, remember? She's been going through this hell. She's been living with this hell for weeks. She's seen these atrocities playing out. So when the specially trained police officers speak to that poor 7-year-old little girl, she says that Innes had paid her for jobs. And those jobs, they were sexual in nature. And they were extreme. She was repeatedly raped. She had constant sexual assaults. And she was even given pieces of paper by the police because one of the things that they need to do is be very specific. It's one of the most challenging things that children have to endure when they're being interviewed. I have worked with lots of children who've been sexually abused, sadly, and the police need that child to be incredibly specific about the kind of abuse that has played out. They use dolls sometimes, or they use pictures, and they ask the child to point out the areas of the human body, because I will be honest with you, it doesn't matter your age, the defense are brutal with victims. They are brutal with witnesses. If you are a victim and you are actually being questioned, even if you're being questioned by video link, you have to be really specific. It's incredibly traumatizing. I would say re-traumatizing for so many victims when they are being questioned this way, but this happens. So these specially trained officers give her pieces of paper, and it means that she can indicate what Innes had made her do to his body, and also what he had done to hers. And wow, she had suffered 2 weeks of horrific, sustained abuse. She was often restrained. She was often gagged whilst being repeatedly raped by this bastard. Police found handcuffs in Inna's property and the medical examination, because again, that's another re-traumatising experience for the child. She has to be medically examined, even though it's obvious that she was there and no grown man has a child held against their will for anything other than sexual purposes, as far as I'm concerned. She still has to go through this medical examination so they can identify the kind of abuse that's occurred. And when they do that, they find traces of Inna's semen in her body. And it gets worse, guys. It later transpires that that little 7-year-old girl had chlamydia. And of course, chlamydia that is undiagnosed can cause infertility, scarring inside. And it turns out that he had exactly the same infection. So each time he had assaulted her, he'd then use this as a payment structure. So he would give her small amounts of cash, and that was his reasoning as to why he had a right to do what he did to that poor girl. But that abuse wasn't just restricted to that 7-year-old little girl. She told the police, the first job, Jellica was there, Jellica was with me. And then the rest of the jobs, Jellica was dead. After the first job, in inverted commas, they'd both been given £2.10. I do not even want to contemplate the agony of those children, and a 7-year-old girl's body cannot manage such intrusion and violation, but a 2-year-old's, it is catastrophic for a child of that age to be abused, catastrophic physically. In Inna's property, the investigators did a thorough search and they were able to find discarded condoms in a rubbish bin, and the testing revealed the presence of Jellica's DNA on that condom. When I say hell is too good for this man, I genuinely mean it. If we could send him to the centre of the earth in its hottest form, I would pay for that to occur. And I'm sure that if I did a GoFundMe, we would probably raise enough to send several others to accompany him. So after Inna's has murdered this little girl's mum, he had gone on and sexually abused that 2-year-old little girl. I don't even want to contemplate, and I can't contemplate, the horrific fear that little girl must have gone through. Her mother, who was with her 24/7, suddenly vanishes. She's crying for her all the time. She's left in a strange house with a monster for 2 days without her beloved mum. And she's sexually assaulted and then brutally murdered by him. Now, Inez had claimed that 2-year-old Jellica and the 7-year-old girl were basically watching television when he killed Benelin. But she was witness to that murder. She saw it unfolding in front of her. And the fact that she didn't know what to do means that she felt a level of responsibility which she should never feel. But a 7-year-old child in that moment watching the execution of that poor woman had more conscience and morality running through her little finger than that predator did in his entire body and being. The police are also able to recover the murder weapons from the property. So they get the lump hammer, they get the samurai sword. And when they do the analysis on the hammer, they find clear positive DNA matches for Benelin. There's blood stains all over the handle. It's clear that these are the weapons that have been used. And when the police are actually questioning Inna's, he actually admits that if they had gone to the property 24 hours later, they'd have probably found the body of the 7-year-old girl too. So he was not gonna let that girl go. And this isn't just about paedophilia. This is about an individual who essentially is a serial killer. He wants to kill and kill and kill again. So the girl tells the police that she was kept prisoner in his home the entire time. She said, Andrew put a rope on the door and attached it to the other door and I couldn't open it. Andrew would open it when he came back. So she was completely within his power. She was helpless. She'd actually tried to persuade him to take her out with him because she knew that she was at risk and she knew that the only chance of escape was to go outside, but he'd never done it. She was always within his reach, or she was imprisoned in his home. Now, the analysis they did on the tech that Inna's had, wow. The browsing history identified that 3 days before collecting Benelin from Bristol, He'd actually searched what is chloroform used for, and he'd also searched about underfloor storage. This man had a plan, and he'd been planning it for a period of time, looking for the perfect victim. It's as simple as that. When we get to Innes's trial, which took place at the High Court in Edinburgh in January this year, 2023, he'd already admitted killing Benlyn and killing Adora, but he stuck to that last version of events, and he claimed that he'd killed Benlyn in rage after she'd reminded him of two women who'd betrayed him, and that he'd killed Jellica a few days later because the girl had basically died during a game of hide and seek. I mean, this guy doesn't deserve a trial. You don't deserve a trial. No. Nobody deserves a trial. He just needs to be thrown in prison and fed scraps until he takes his last breath. It's as simple as that. He is literally somebody who deserves no human rights. What we are describing is a monster, and he should be treated as a monster. There is no reforming, rehabilitating, treating this kind of predator. He has a lust for killing, a love for killing, and if he hadn't been apprehended, he would have continued without a doubt. The idea that he tries to claim that this little beautiful child dies in a game of hide and seek shows you just how disturbing his mindset and lack of accountability and responsibility truly is. He basically said that the reason that she'd been killed during that game was there'd been a struggle. She'd been going near an electrical transformer, and that she'd have exploded had she touched it. But she kept trying to touch it. Anybody who's got a 2-year-old or 3-year-old or 4-year-old, if you tell a child a bad thing's going to happen if you touch that, you're not going to go and touch it. It's as simple as that. Kids don't want to explode. At the end of the day, it demonstrates how limited his understanding is of children per se, because he doesn't care about kids. He cares about the only thing that concerns him where kids are concerned, which is his sexual predilection towards them. So he then says that she'd wanted to be with her mum. And so that's why when he killed her, it seemed logical to put her with her mum under the floor. Again, this is a man trying to piece together the most ridiculous reasoning behind his actions, minimizing his actions, making out that really he's a victim in all this. He was just trying to protect a child from exploding. And the mother, yes, he'd killed, but it was in this fit of diminished responsibility. And that in itself demonstrates just how manipulative and culpable he is. He said that the reason that he couldn't essentially be considered guilty for what he'd done was because the medication he was taking for Crohn's disease had really contributed, along with the steroids that he was taking, to actually develop psychosis. And he added to that he hadn't been to sleep the previous night. When he'd committed the killings, he was technically, as far as he was concerned, therefore insane. Bear in mind, this is ludicrous because there's overwhelming evidence where he was sexually abusing the child that was there being kept against her will. So in spite of the fact that they have compelling evidence of the abuse of Jellicoe and the 7-year-old, he denies being involved with them sexually at all. There's DNA everywhere. It's obvious that he's been sexually intimate. He's given the little girl chlamydia. So he's bound to rights. No one's ever going to believe this BS, but he's genuinely believing this is a way to attempt to evade justice. Subsequently, bear in mind, because he was such a coward, because he was only caring about his own freedom, because he believed that actually he could pull the wool over the eyes of the jury, which is quite unbelievable. It's unmistakable to me how delusional this kind of individual is regarding other people's senses and sensibilities. Like, literally, let anybody in to that jury, doesn't matter their age, chronology, doesn't matter their gender, doesn't matter their orientation, belief systems, etc. What matters is they just listen to the story and be like, you're guilty, I don't even need to know anything else. But he thinks that he can convince people that really he's just a victim in this as well. And because of that, because he says it's diminished responsibility, because he is basically insisting on this trial, he puts Benelin's loved ones through that trial. And her family, they travel from the Philippines to watch the proceedings because they loved her and they loved Jellicoe. They went there without a doubt because they loved her, because they wanted to have her legacy and justice served, and they knew that she wouldn't be there to tell her story, but that they would be there to ensure that he knew that she was loved and that he knew that they didn't believe him at all. Now, earlier, there had been reports gathered, so psychiatric and psychological reports, and one of the things that they had concluded is that he had autism spectrum disorder. So in court, Innes stated that, "I've known for a long time that I'm not wired up the same as other people are. As a wee boy, I identified with Pob, then it was the Rain Man thing, and then there was Sheldon Cooper. He was a character in the Big Bang Theory, and he had a similar condition to mine." Sorry? So what's that? He had a similar condition to yours? Yes, Sheldon from the Big Bang Theory. You know, the physicist, the one who wins the Nobel Peace Prize at the end. You're saying that you're like Sheldon? Yes. Just going to throw it out there. Sheldon Cooper isn't a sadistic, murdering paedophile. Just, you know, don't want to split hairs, you absolute freak. Anyway, the medical expert, of course, who is talking about this in his witness testimony, says autism does not predispose this man to violence. And on top of the fact that this kind of discounts what Innes is saying, he says there's absolutely no impairment as far as learning difficulties are concerned. There's no impairment to intellectual functioning. And the prosecution basically say, look, you did not carry out those killings because you were temporarily insane. You had purposefully and in a premeditated manner lured those individuals to your home and to their deaths. You'd planned it, you'd bought the tools, you'd got the materials that were needed, you decided on where you were going to dispose their bodies, you'd carried out the murders, and you'd gone ahead and done exactly what you had planned. Now, if you'd been in a psychotic state, you would not have been able to go about your normal business. My father suffered from psychosis, and let me tell you, he was not in a compos mentis state in those episodes. It's horrifically scary, and they are not able to communicate or deal with the world around them in a way that is typical in any way, shape or form. So it's clear that he wasn't psychotic, and it really blows my mind that these predators believe that they can just throw in the "I was out of my mind" card, and people are going to be like, yeah, of course, because that's what people do. They go and murder women and children, which we all know is not what people who are mentally ill do. Quite the contrary, mentally ill people may be a risk to themselves because they don't get the right support and help and love that they deserve in those moments. But the truth is, they don't go around murdering people. Murderers murder people. Simple as that. Now, people would have noticed if he had been psychotic. So when he went and bought the lump hammer and so on and so forth, you would have seen it. People around him would have seen it. So the prosecution are putting that very strong case forward. You know, there's no way this guy was out of his mind at all. And they go on as well and say, just think about the aggregating factors here. This poor woman who gets murdered, she was 4'6", she was 5 stone 7 pounds, she was tiny. Benjamin didn't stand a chance against him. And once he'd killed her, it wasn't enough. He then turned his attention to a daughter. So the prosecution are painting this picture of a man who's manipulating and trying to manipulate the system. And they actually add in what is a very aggravating factor about Benjamin, which is she was only 4'6" tall and she was 5 stone 7 pounds. She didn't stand a chance against her attacker. And once he'd actually gone ahead and killed her, that wasn't enough for him. He turned his attention on her 2-year-old daughter, just as he had with the 7-year-old girl. He'd systematically sexually abused her. And then ultimately, because he gets tired of this constant crying, because she's a 2-year-old child who hasn't got her mum and is terrified, he kills her too. Now, the details of the prosecution's case, they were so harrowing that some members of the jury couldn't actually bring themselves to even look at Innes when he testified in his defence. They were utterly revolted by him. Apparently, he frequently sobbed and also rambled whilst giving evidence. I mean, personally, I think he should have been sobbing, but I'm imagining the reason for that is that people like me are throwing bricks at him whilst giving his evidence. In some cases, I do feel there is an appropriate reality to doing that. I know that I'm not queen of the world, and I'm certainly not in charge of the legal judiciary in the UK. Just saying, back in the old days, throwing bricks at somebody might have been okay, you know, if they were certainly banged to rights. And this guy, if anybody does deserve bricks thrown at them in the courtroom, amen to that. That's all I'm saying. But the fact that he's frequently sobbing, that means that he feels sorry for himself. Wow. No wonder the jury couldn't look at him. Because honestly, you can just imagine the disdain and resentment and hate that they would be expressing. But also the fact that to actually come face to face, eye to eye with a beast like that is so unusual. And I guess if you've seen it, you can't unsee it. So I do understand why the jury wanted to protect themselves from that. Now, after all the evidence had actually been presented, Judge Lord Beckett actually advised the jury that there was no evidence to support Inna's defence of a mental impairment at the time of the killings, and he actually directed them to find him guilty of both murders. So after a five-day trial and 2.5 hours deliberation, the jury found Inna's guilty of Benalyn Angelica's murders. Of course they did! I wish I could have read the guilty verdict. He was also found guilty, rightfully so, of sexually assaulting Angelica, raping the seven-year-old girl, and attempting to evade justice by burying the bodies beneath the kitchen floor. We get to the 6th of February 2023. Lord Beckett sentenced the 52-year-old Inners to life imprisonment with a minimum term of 36 years. I would have added a zero on the end. I think 360 years would be actually a more appropriate sentence. I think 360 years and then eternal damnation, burning brightly in agonising pain for eternity. That would be the kind of sentence I'd be throwing in there. But I do get that as far as the judge is concerned, that guy is not going to be walking our streets again. At the end of the day, he's going to die in prison. That's what he's worked out when he's been summing that up. He actually described the case as one of the most harrowing in Scottish criminal history, and the full details of Inna's crimes, apparently too harrowing to ever even be made fully public. The jury who presided over that horrific case, they were excused from service for the rest of their lives. So you can just imagine the level of trauma that they incurred during that particular experience of being on the jury. They will never have to do jury service ever again because it was just too harrowing and too traumatising for them. Benalyn Angelica's lovely family, they spoke about the loss that they felt after the trial, and they described Benalyn as the hope and light of our family. They said this: the light has been cruelly snuffed out. Benalyn had bright ideas and big dreams. She bravely left home to seek a better future in a country far away. Instead, she found the worst cruelty we could ever imagine at the hands of someone she trusted. They stated that they would be forever haunted by their deaths, and they'd never get the chance to see little Jellica grow up. Now, Inna's only survivor, the seven-year-old girl, she's traumatised beyond belief by what she endured. And it was stated during the sentencing phase that she literally could not trust any man. In fact, she gets so scared when a man enters a room, she can only think about how she can potentially escape from it. How dare he? How dare he have scarred that little girl so badly? The only slight, and I say slight consolation, guys, the only slight consolation is that Andrew Inners will not be escaping from prison anytime soon. And I have this little hope. I have this little hope that his fellow inmates show him the same kind of hospitality that Inners showed to his innocent victims. Because you know that? That'll really give him something to cry about, won't it? This has been one of those cases that I have to contain my rage when I'm expressing it and describing it to you. When I saw the harrowing reports about what had happened in this case, I wanted to follow it. And even though it's been very, very recent, like I said, I don't know whether a lot of you will know about this particular case and the outcome of it. It is profoundly disturbing that these kind of individuals live amongst us. And the fact that Benalyn Angelica came to the UK seeking a better life, only to have their beautiful lives ended in such brutality, it's unthinkable. I'm glad that man is going to rot in jail. I hope he's in pain every single moment, every single second for the rest of his days. I don't wish on him any positive moment, any smile, any laughter. I hope that food is tasteless. And I hope that every single day, the self-pity drives him to a despair that very few of us can ever imagine. Only then will his incarceration make any sense to me. That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.